embarrassing there. Just wanted y'all to get to know me a little. So yeah, here's a few more passages from my journal. The heading is, On Drink. This morning I woke up and I heard the sirens outside my door. I could not help but wonder what I had done. Last night, I was very, very drunk, and they were coming for me. In my stupor, I obviously had done something quite awful, like run over a child or something with my automobile. But then it hit me. I had ridden my bicycle that evening, and I was sure I would have felt something had I hit somebody with it, and the sirens had long since passed. I'm finding that wine tasting is most definitely a state of mind, and that it requires some discipline. Last night, I drank red Zinfandel for the first time. I made a breakthrough in how to smell. Maybe this was a result of how my passages were doing at the time, but I found that I could smell the wine more fully when, before sniffing the wine, I inhaled briefly, but deeply through my nose, exhaled the same way, brought my nose just over the edge of the glass, and inhaled again. The fruit aroma smacked me across the chops, harder than when I would simply swirl and sniff towards the center. Maybe it worked better because my nose was closer to the sides of the glass, where the leg residue is. I don't know. All I know is that it worked. Now, this is more of a technical note on the physical nature of experiencing wine. As far as the state of mind goes, I found that it's much easier to enjoy the wine after I was done making dinner and had less on my mind. Too often, I've opened a wine just as the oven is warming up, poured a glass, and tasted amidst all the kitchen chaos. Also, I get too nervous when I'm about to sip it. I'm overtaken with insecurity. What if I don't smell anything? What if I don't taste what the label says I should taste? I know it's fruit, but I don't know what kind. What if I suck at everything? Oh, God! I think both of these elements add up to enjoying the wine less. This requires some attention. Saw an elderly man buy a six-pack for a kid. The boy paid with one of the beers. If wine is rich, it should go well with hearty meat and or dark meat. The focus involved in tasting may help train my all-around focusing skills. Cool. So this fish, it is dead, right?
Yes, you just put the fish on a stick, like a saw.
Interesting.
And the rotating mechanical hips, they make it a walk.
Well, I really appreciate it, suit and tie.
That is my wife's touch.
Good. The walking fish, everybody! Got whacked by a lady with a cane. I believe I first saw our next guest act about a year and a half or so ago at the Division Blue Line stop. He's quite the showman, as I'm sure you're about to find out. Now, broadcast for the first time anywhere, live from his wheeled hospital bed, where he's currently nursing faked injuries, a man who everyone can tell is tired as all get-out, but still, he knows he exists only to please you. The one, the only, the laid-up entertainer.
Well, thank you, everybody. Oh, man, do my bed sores ever itch today. Surely. But I'll get started anyway. Throw change down if you want, all right? I'll begin every set by reading this letter I wrote to my mother, so I'd like to continue that precedent here. Okay. Dear mother, well, get ready to get all proud now. I finally done up and done by done it. I got myself a real place of employment. Well, shucks, after all these months, I know it. Yep, and guess what else? It's in the entertainment business. My talents are finally going to be on display. Me, an invalid, giving the people what they need. Who would have thunk it? All those hours I spent in the bathroom homing my VCs, woo-ha, they finally paid off. Made 25 cents the other day, and it's burning a hole in my pocket. Love you, Mama. All right, here we go. Cheese dogs and ham hocks and rotten fried chicken. Cream horns and sweet corn, old lollipops for licking. Beat up head cabbages and want an old shoe. I bet you can find nourishment eating trash too. Moon pies and ribeyes and entrails of cattle. 8 jars of Cheese Whiz looked like they'd been in battle. Pickled egg funions and dinty more stew. Their filth can truly do good things for you.
It's that, no, hey, I'm funny despite your lack of laughter attitude that makes the comedian for me.
The cool thing about getting kidnapped? Well, I guess there are a lot of cool things, but the coolest thing is that you get to go to all of these places you wouldn't have gone to otherwise. You know, places kidnappers go.
Like to hold up the banks and stuff, right?
Exactly.
Interesting. Do you want to know how small or tall I am?
I would like to very much.
33 inches.
Wow.
Do you want to know how tall my partner Khan is?
Why, yes, I do meet you.
8 feet tall. And he weighs 380 pounds. I only weigh 22 pounds. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I'm interviewing the great revolutionary Barry Hulse from a lap, as is my wont. I am Mishu, the smallest man in the world. You can see me at the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus in your town very soon. Okay, Patty, explain you what your role in the SLA was.
Well, Mishu, as most people know, the Symbionese Liberation Army kidnapped me and then brainwashed me into fighting alongside them. So my role was mostly that of someone coerced.
Why did you not shoot them when you had the gun?
I believed in what they were doing. I mean, I was brainwashed to believe in their struggle.
I believe in the circus. Did you know I have worked for them since 1973?
No, I didn't meet you.
It is true. Why did your organization kill Marcus Foster? Unquestionably, he was a good man.
First off, Michi, that was not my organization. They had not even kidnapped me by the time Mr. Foster was murdered.
But what about all he did for the Oakland schools?
Well, Sinke, that's Donald DeFries. He would be the one you would want to ask about that. Or Bio Wheeler or Bo Ramiro. But they're all dead or jailed or who knows what. Michi, so...
Yes, I do my research. I know all about them. It does seem, though, that you could have escaped after Sinke and the others died in L.A.
But I was still being controlled by the Harrises. What is this?
Did you know I was in the movie The Waxworks?
Did you know I was in Pecker?
Yes, I do my research.
I was also in Serial Mom and Crybaby, too.
Enough promotion. Which Che Guevara do you find more endearing? The picture of the violent revolutionary? Or the picture that is on all of the kids' T-shirts these days?
I don't know how to answer that question.
Yes, you do.
No, no, I don't, Michu.
I am very small, yes?
Yes, Michu.
Do you still think that all of those imprisoned in the United States should be released and that monogamy should come to an end?
Those were the SLA's tenets, not mine.
I was also the star of the Big Top Pee-wee. It was a great role. It was great to work with Mr. Herman. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for tonight. I am Michu Meza, the smallest man in the world. And I will see you next week, when I will interview another surprise guest from the lab. Remember, always do your research, everybody. 22 pounds. Good night.
Take out that old shovel and dig yourself a hole. Take out that old shovel and dig yourself a hole. If you're looking for a place to lie down, take out that old shovel and dig yourself a hole.
These guys, they were up in the treehouse and they were f***ing each other in the and we asked them what they were doing and
you can't say
and,
that.
And I thought both of these comments were hilarious and I lost my balance and fell out of the tree and broke my leg, but it was well worth it because that was a really fine time. I don't know, I just started cracking up because it was totally great. This guy hid an egg in his f***ing and balanced all these quarters in his f***ing off, and it was stupendous.
What are you doing?
This is really great. I love telling you guys my jokes. Wow, one time I was with this prostitute and my friend, he had another one, and we were all f***ing on the same bed, and when my friend got up to go to the bathroom, his girl on his
get him off the stage! Sorry about this, everybody! Sophisticated.
What's with all of the commotion out here?
Well, Tricky Green's in the blue room, and he's tearing the place all up. He says we didn't stuff the tons of schnitzels he requested.
Yeah?
I told him we had all other kind of breakfast-type items in there. Shecky, so please just enjoy one of those. But he starts throwing stuff all around, freaking out, saying he's gonna leave. We gotta get somebody with a car to go get the schnitzels for him.
Well, mine just got towed and all. It's in the shop.
Well, okay, well, you're probably the only one who can afford a cab, right?
What? I can't leave. I've got to keep these people entertained!
All right, well, I'll go get them then. Just give me some money.
Whoa, you bet that cat's on stilts.
Well, I think to understand the Catholic schism of 1546, one must be able to see, to comprehend, the Church as an organization throughout history and all that has transpired before the separation.
Interesting. Well, I can say for sure I don't know enough about that, so you might as well just start from the top, if that's all right. Tonight, I'm talking to Jackson Jones, Professor Emeritus of Temple University, on the subject of the Catholic Schism of 1546.
Well, I would be glad to delve into some of that history for you. Though, with the time restrictions we have here, I will of course have to edit out certain parts of this rather extensive discussion. Now, the first major division of the Christian Church happened at the time of the Fourth Council of Constantinople. Disagreements had been building, and the Eastern Church was greatly displeased with the way elections were taking place, with a great amount of light interference in each papal appointment. So they decided to break away from the West. At the previous council, known as the Second Council of Nicaea, there were severe arguments about the veneration, reverence, and adoration of idols, expanding upon the issue stated before. In the council prior to this, which was at Constantinople also, about the unity of the person of the Christ. These issues may seem somewhat trivial, somewhat wordy, but for some reason, they had a lasting negative effect on the oneness of the church.
Interesting.
Yes indeed. And well, so these councils, which were meant to further the church through stabilizing its view, unifying the group on important issues, well, they were not working in that way at all. Fissures began to show up over the rejection of the Monophysite doctrine, over the marriage of monks and clergy, the homophysites of the father. What was that?
Nothing. It's not time yet.
Oh, all right. So sectarian strife, which was meant to come to an end for these councils, was actually being exasperated. This all led to the schism of 1054, which included Pope Leo excommunicating the leader of the Eastern Church. Michael Cornelius, over his portion of the church's distaste for clerical celibacy and the use of unleavened bread in the Eucharist. Now, the celibacy issue one can understand, I think, a bit more easily. That's a sort of a big topic there. But unleavened bread? It hardly seems like proper grounds for a divorce, to me anyway.
You're absolutely correct, sir. Correct indeed.
And then, well, more councils commenced, and such as the Lateran councils, which condemned simony, the selling of ecclesiastical privileges like pardons, and attempted to clarify issues concerning papal elections. Could you tell them to stop?
What? Stop. No way, no how. Ladies and gentlemen, reach beneath your seats and pick up your instruments. Professor, you might want to sprint off stage. It's time for everyone to get up here and blow in kazoos. Let's do it, everybody. Let's get wild. It's time to blow in your kazoos.
I really haven't gotten to the coffee excuse him yet. I...